College football summer is no time to slouch because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
That isn't the time for an airing of grievances.
Pro Football Talk.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
He is the creator and editor-in-chief of Pro Football Talk. He follows a story like no other, and he joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. It is Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. Mike, thanks for joining Rahimi and Harris on The Score. How are you?
Great to be with you. As always, got to get framed up here just right in your shot. There we go. Ready to go.
Oh, yeah. The Mike Florio palatial estate. We've got the wine cooler in the background, the glasses hanging from the wall. And it's a nice Mediterranean color motif. If you want to see it, you can join us on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Mike, I think we have to start with the latest in the collusion case that has now really picked up steam. When it comes to all the tentacles that you have followed now, along with Pablo Torre, for weeks, I think we're up to months at this point. What do you think about the latest developments of the NFL having to acknowledge this in a way that they didn't have to before?
Well, the reality is that, and it's still confusing and inexplicable, that the NFL Players Association would secure a partial victory in an important collusion case, one of the most important collusion rulings in pro sports history, that the NFL management council, with the blessing of the commissioner, urged teams to collude when it comes to fully guaranteed contracts. The NFLPA scored that partial victory, had plenty of evidence developed, circumstantial evidence, but still strong evidence to show that there was actual collusion, even though the arbitrator disagreed, and they would agree to the NFL, with the NFL, to hide that. Why would you agree to hide that? Hide that indefinitely. And now it's going to be appealed, primarily because it's been exposed. I don't know how the appeal is going to go. I don't know if it just goes away quickly and quietly in exchange for the NFL giving up its ability to pursue more than $12 million in legal fees that were spent in connection with a grievance that the NFL won. So it is just disappointing because, you know, for years, the league has been using against the players the fact that the players don't care. And now I feel like non-player leadership of the union is using against the players and has been using against the players the fact that they don't care. And it dates back to the hiring of Lloyd Howell, which was done very secretly, and no one knew what was going on. No one even knew who the candidates were, and the players did not care.
Mike, looking at where that is now, do you expect any reasonable change between now and the, I guess, if I'm looking at a window, the end of this calendar year?
Well, Chris Long, who was the Walter Payton Man of the Year, 2017 season, played a long time in the NFL, has a podcast now. He suggested that what the non-player leadership is trying to do with the union for now is get to the start of training camp, because by then everyone will be distracted. They will have forgotten about it. I'll say this, though. The statement that was put out on Sunday by the union, circling the wagons around Executive Director Lloyd Howell, which was extensively covered by plenty of media members who had otherwise had their head in the sand on this entire story, but all of a sudden they get handed a self-serving statement from the union and they blast it out on their Twitter pages. Don't get me started on that. But in that statement, there's an acknowledgement they have a process in place, and there's been a law firm hired to look into the activities of Lloyd Howell. There are multiple different tentacles to that now, whether it's the investigation over his connection to a company known as One Team Partners. That's been documented. Hiding the collusion ruling and not using it in the best interest of the players. That's been documented. And the thing that is the most ridiculous to me, and I have a hard time even saying this with a straight face, the idea that the man who is ultimately in charge of one of the most important sports unions in the country has a part-time gig with a private equity firm that is in bed with the NFL. I can't believe that. I can't believe that's been allowed to exist. I can't believe that from the moment that ESPN reported on that wrinkle last week, Lloyd Howell wasn't told, you have to choose right now one or the other. You have to choose right now. And if you choose NFLPA and quit the Carlisle Group, you're still not out of the woods because we're still concerned about some of this other stuff. But that conflict of interest is as blatant and as stunning as it could be. The man whose sole job in life should be to advocate for the members of the NFL Players Association is getting paid by a company that's been approved by the NFL to purchase minority interests in teams. It is a joke. And that, more than anything else, proves that the players don't care. The fact that there isn't an uproar and a revolt to get rid of him based on that fact and that fact alone tells me the players don't care and non-player leadership is taking advantage of that.
Well, and to put it into context, Mike, I think it's important to talk about the money that he's receiving from this. You know, when we're thinking of side hustles, this isn't the salary equivalent of an Uber driver here. This is a reported, what, $2.5 million per year? Did I read
3.
That somewhere?
4.
3.4. My bad. I shorted him. Oh, yeah, I shorted him 900,000.
And
that's the part of this that I don't understand too. Is that not only is that money significant, think about rookie salaries per year. Think about how much money that they are leaving on the table, these individual NFL players, potentially because he's getting his, and that's the part-time job.
What would we say if the commissioner of the NFL had a part-time job doing anything? What would we say? What would he say if his part-time job consisted of serving as a paid consultant for a company that has a business relationship with the NFLPA? What would we say? And I know the world has changed. We now live in post-truth, post-standards America, and things that used to matter don't matter anymore. And basically the message is, get what you can while you can. And if you ever get challenged on it, attack, deny, and declare victory. I get that. But, you know, I was raised in a quaint time where things like this mattered. And conflicts of interest mattered. And people were willing to say, you can't do that. There isn't enough of a willingness for people to say, you can't do that. And maybe that's because we've just surrendered, or maybe it's because we've changed the standard. If we've changed the standard, that's the worst possible outcome, because we need to care about conflicts of interest because people get taken advantage of. And if you have constituents that don't care, that makes it even easier to exploit potential conflicts of interest.
He is Mike Florio, the creator and editor-in-chief of Pro Football Talk. He joins us every week here on Rahimi and Harris, and we delve into the most serious of issues. Also try to rub a little fun in it, but things aren't fun right now as training camps are starting to rack up, if you will. Mike, there's a lot of second-round picks out here that are not signed. What should we make of that situation, and how serious could it become? The Bears here in Chicago have 3 second-round picks who haven't been signed.
Well, you know, it's funny, all this talk about collusion. The Texans definitely did not collude. They broke the mold here. They became the first team to give a second-round pick a fully guaranteed contract. Jaden Higgins, receiver they took with the second selection in round 2, he gets 100% guaranteed. Well, that boxed in the Browns. They had the first pick in round 2, linebacker Carson Schwechinger. He got 100% fully guaranteed. So he got 30 guys taken after them in round 2. And some are saying that all of them want fully guaranteed contracts. But when you look at the percentage of the contracts for last year's round 2 players, how much of it was guaranteed, like by the time you get to the bottom of round, it's like 52, 53%. The problem is the guys late in the round don't know what percent they should shoot for, because they don't know how deep this 100% is going to go. And you know, the guys who got a certain percentage fully guaranteed last year, they're going to get more this year, but how much more? So I think what's got to happen, there's got to be one guy that gets less than 100. And some think it's going to be Quinshon Judkins, the Ohio State running back, who's the fourth pick in round two by the Browns. He got arrested over the weekend for misdemeanor domestic battery. The thinking is, on the heels of that incident, he'll take less than 100% fully guaranteed, and that will cause all the others to fall in line. But that's the gist of it. That's what happened. The Texans gave a guy a fully guaranteed contract, and it has caused everyone else to just kind of say, oh, crap, what do we do next? And I think they're waiting for that first player at the top of round two to not get 100% fully guaranteed, and then everything will fall in place from there.
Well, we're starting to see a lot of interesting stories pop up on Pro Football Talk because of it. Like, for example, the headline, Shamar Stewart could still try to go back to school. You know, talking about workouts and being involved in Texas A&M, which is where he played his college ball. You know, what are the real options here if some of these guys don't end up signing?
And Stewart's in a different situation. He's a first rounder who hasn't signed because the Bengals are trying to change unilaterally the language. And this gets so esoteric, but it's language that relates to how your contract guarantees get voided. And their current default language is, if you do something you shouldn't do, your guarantee for this year is gone. They want Stewart to accept a term that would say all of your future guarantees are gone. They've never done that before. They want Stewart to be the first one. And they don't want to give him anything by way of a concession to balance that out. That's how negotiation works. You balance things out. So they're staring at each other. And the Bengals' attitude is, just sign the thing. We're not blinking. So Stewart could, in theory, he's got two viable options. One, sit out the entire season, don't play football anywhere, re-enter the draft next year. Anyone but the Bengals can take you. He can do that. The other option is, that's viable, that there are others, but this one's viable, go back to college, play one more year, make as much as you can in NIL money. If you can force your way back onto the field, you have to take on the NCAA because they're going to say, sorry, you entered the draft, you hired an agent. And the argument would be, hey, that rule is the same kind of antitrust violation that everything else is that's been exposed. So you better back off or we're going to sue you. So there's a path. You may have to go through court, but there's a path to go back to school for Stewart. He would go back, he would play, he would get paid, and then the Bengals would still hold his rights as the 17th pick in the draft next year. So there's a number at which I think Stewart says, I'll do it. I don't know how big it would have to be, but I think there's a number where he'd say, if you're going to pay me that much to play college football, I'll try it. And, you know, the fallback always is, I'll do my deal with the Bengals and I'll show up for training camp in the regular season.
Yeah, I think there's a couple tentacles to this. I think number one, Texas A&M fans, knowing them and their boosters, I think that they would try to make it happen monetarily because any chance that they get to be better, they might be interested. Number two, he puts the Bengals in a really difficult situation because of what's going on with Trey Hendrickson. And then number three, when you mentioned the contract setup, does it relate at all to what Caleb Williams and his group was trying to contest before he ended up signing his contract? Are the two related at all?
Yes and no. I mean, at the end of the day, look, Caleb Williams and his dad, I believe, were trying to be extremely creative about the various things they were suggesting and pursuing. And I respect the Williamses for the ideas they brought to the table and the things they tried to do. But at the end of the day, this isn't about money. This is about power, I think. And I think it's about the teams reminding the players, we own this. We run this. You just work here. And at some point, you will be gone and there will be another player who takes your place, but we will still be here. We make the terms. You just sign the contract and you go to work. And I think that's the attitude the Bengals have had towards Stewart. And I think in refusing to play along with the suggestions that were made last year by Caleb Williams to the Bears, that's part of it. And it all ties back to collusion, too, because even though they'd never admit this, look, no team wants to be the one that sends in a proposed contract to the NFL Management Council that has some revolutionary new term that could spread throughout the league that could weaken the collective power of the teams. It all goes back to fully guaranteed contracts or anything else. So there's always this concern they're going to get in trouble with the management council. Even though they're supposed to be competing, 32 independent businesses, they answer to the management council. And I would suspect that the reason the Bears said no, 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 no to everything Caleb Williams wanted, they were concerned they send in some crazy new contract term to the management council. They're going to get a phone call. What the hell are you doing?
Mike Florio joining us here on Raheemy and Harris, the creator and editor-in-chief of Pro Football Talk. I wanted to ask you about something that was written about and something we paid attention to, obviously, working in the media industry. FS1 changing a lot of their programming this week, and a lot of that is football-based. I'm wondering if we're talking about a different ecosystem as far as what we look at when it comes to sports media, the fact that football kind of drive some of this programming, if that's going to change what we see on these cable networks now with so many people shifting to the YouTube model, the podcast model. It seems like there's going to be a break from establishment media because more and more people are getting their entertainment, sports, news, all of that stuff from that side of it as opposed to the establishment.
I don't disagree with that. I think it's a complicated question. I think a lot of it has to do potentially with the people who were on the air. You know, for former players, and I've told multiple players this over the year, the first thing you've got to do is stop approaching the game like a player and start approaching the game like a fan. Don't act like it's beneath you to be a fan. And for the guys who can't be bothered to act like fans, they don't last long in the media because they don't know as much as they should. They aren't engaged as much as they should. They just think they're entitled to go get a check and be on TV because they think they do a good job, but they don't have the substance to back it up. So I think that may be part of it. I'm not going to name names of the guys who were let go, but I think that may be part of it. Secondly, I agree. And I think Fox, look, and they always tell us, don't talk about other networks. Don't talk about other networks, because I think the executives at NBC don't like getting, you know, phone calls from their contemporaries with the other networks saying, why is your guy saying this? But I will say this. If you're going to program old-fashioned linear TV, it's got to be programmed with an eye toward where else will this live and how else can we monetize this as a podcast, as a YouTube show, clips that get pumped onto our digital platforms. You know, I know what we do every morning on Peacock. That goes to SiriusXM 85. It goes to podcasts. It goes to YouTube. The clips end up on the PFT website. With every story, there's a clip, and they monetize it 10 different ways. If you're only monetizing your content through linear TV, you will fail. And again, I don't want to give free advice to Fox. I think they know better than I do. But if you're only thinking about the linear TV audience, you are destined to fail. You've got to be thinking bigger than that.
Our segment with Mike is brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today. And quickly, Mike, before our break hits here, I want to ask you about Jahmyr Gibbs, because we see this, and we're always paying attention to what the NFC North is doing. He says he's lining up at receiver more in this year's offense as we try to figure out what happens to the Lions offense post Ben Johnson. This is a detail.
I'm a firm believer in getting your 11 best players on the field at all times. And Jahmyr Gibbs is one of the most talented running backs in the NFL. And the problem is he doesn't get the ball in his hands enough to show it and to earn the kind of contract that being one of the best running backs in the NFL would entail. And I don't know how much of this is we have to placate him. There's a delicate balance there, because if you feature a guy and he becomes the workhorse, then you have to give him that giant contract. If he's not the workhorse and the numbers aren't there, then maybe you don't have to give him as big of a contract. But I think all of this is part of, and you know, this is a problem the Lions have never had. We got a bunch of great young players. How do we pay all of them? But Gibbs is going to be knocking on the door after this season for his second contract. And touches, reps, where you're playing, how you're playing, what you're doing, that's all going to be part of it. But as a football proposition, look, I think the best outcome is make him your workhorse and let David Montgomery be the backup. All due respect to David Montgomery, Jahmyr Gibbs is a better player. But if you're going to go with Montgomery from time to time, find a way to keep Gibbs on the field and have your 11 best guys on the field at all times. So it's just fascinating to see what they do post Ben Johnson. You take the best offensive mind in football and you lose him to the Bears. What does the replacement do? And maybe do they try too hard to out Ben Johnson, Ben Johnson?
Excellent point, Mike. That was Mike Florio. Thank you so much for taking the time with us.
Thank you. Have a great week.
Mike Florio, the editor and creator of Pro Football Talk. Coming up next, we keep the training camp discussions going, because we're going to check in in Milwaukee. We'll check in on the Packers and maybe the Brewers as well. Steve Sparky Pfeiffer, host on 105.7, The Fan in Milwaukee. He's coming up next here on Rahimi and Harris on The Score.
College football summer is no time to slouch because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Come on. Good snap, good hold, the kick on the way by Santos, and it is good! The Bears' losing streak comes to an end on the final play of the regular season as Chicago comes to Lambeau and sets the Packers 24-22.
That was Fox Sports, and that's a little bit of trolling on the part of our production staff, Ray Diaz, Robbie Triano, as we broadcast live from the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We go to our Circuit Resort and Casino hotline, CircleLasVegas.com, and that is where we bring in our friend. He works for our sister station, but we're always mad at each other, so to speak. It is Steve Sparky Pfeiffer. He's the afternoon host on 105.7, The Fan in Milwaukee, at Sparky Radio on Twitter. Steve, thanks for joining us. You got any memories of that audio we played there?
No idea what that was. No, I couldn't tell you. No.
I'm trying to remember the last time the Packers won. They had another game after that, right? Did the Packers win the next game?
I don't remember much of anything from last year. You know, I have memory loss in my old age, getting up to 50. It happens, you know? It happens. Just don't ever get old.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, too late for all of us, I'm afraid. Steve, as we get ready for training camp, we thought it would be a good idea to check in Green Bay and just, for all the talk that we've had, I think, about other NFL teams, you know, the former Packers quarterback gets a lot of headlines. What are the latest, I think let's just start with that, major storylines just heading into Packers training camp, in your opinion?
It's relatively quiet, to be honest with you. I think the biggest question just is, you know, can they find another person to go along with Rashawn Gary that can get after the quarterback? They didn't really address it at all in free agency. They decided to sign an offensive guard in free agency. They decided to sign a cornerback in free agency. But they didn't do anything on the defensive line, right? So Trey Henderson is out there for the Bengals as a defensive end. He hasn't been traded yet, but, you know, there was talk of, should the Packers go get him? There was a talk of, should the Packers go get T.J. Watt, a former Badger, and bring him home? He's still in Pittsburgh as well. So neither one of those guys have been moved. So as of right now, nobody can be mad at the Packers if nothing happens there. But that's the big thing, right? Can Lucas Van Ness, a first-round pick out of Iowa who hasn't really done much of anything the last couple of years, finally live up to his potential and provide that? Because for this defense, for defensive coordinator Jeff Hafley, he wants to be able to get after the quarterback with four or five guys and not have to use more than that for his defense to work correctly. And he really hasn't been able to do that the last couple of years. And the hope is maybe this year that can eventually happen. I can't say I have a lot of faith in that happening, but I think that is the one main storyline. And then the other storyline, obviously, is the Packer wide receiving core and just how bad they played last year based on stats and drops and, you know, everything else that goes along with it. Can they get better? Can they get back to how they were 2 years ago and play more like that wide receiving core? Plus, they finally draft a wide receiver in Matthew Golden out of Texas at one. They take another receiver two rounds later in the third round, Savion Williams. So if that wide receiving core plays better, that offense should click up even more than it was last year.
Sparky, how wary are you, if at all, about the way this schedule lines up now with the teams that the NFC North have to face outside their division compared to a year ago? And how do you see the division shaking out this year?
I don't know. I mean, my thing on the schedule is, you know, we all like to do it in sports talk. Let's go over the schedule and go win-loss, and see how many wins and losses we can come up with. But you really don't know. Every year there's a couple of bad teams from the previous year that end up being really good that nobody thought was going to be really good. Then there's a couple of teams that are good that either get really hurt and fall down or just have bad seasons. So that's tough. And again, I know I'm going to sound spoiled, but when you're a Packer fan, you just expect to win double-digit games every year. Like, regardless of what the schedule looks like, you just figure like they're going to win 10 or 11 games or more based on what you see. Now, if they have injury issues again where Jordan Love, you know, continuously gets hurt like happened last year, then obviously that's going to be a tougher road to go down for the Green Bay Packers. But if Jordan Love is actually healthy, I don't really get too concerned about whatever you want to put in front of the Packers. I feel pretty confident in that aspect. The division you asked about, I think it's pretty open, right? I mean, it's the Lions and the Packers for sure. And then after that, then there's a possibility the Vikings could get back into it. That's depending on J.J. McCarthy starting at a quarterback. We don't know what that's going to look like. And then the Bears, you know, there's a lot of talk about, well, they won the offseason for the 20th year in a row or whatever. Mm. But, you know, can they come through and do it? Can Caleb Williams get better? And listen, of all the guys that they could have had, Ben Johnson was the last one I wanted them to have, right? That dude is brilliant. He's really good. But we've seen brilliant offensive coordinators in the past not be able to be good head coaches. So we don't know what he's going to be like as a head coach. I do like the fact that he's not in Detroit any longer. That makes me happy. That makes Vikings fans happy. And I'm sure it makes Bears fans happy. We don't got to deal with him as an offensive coordinator. And that's why I think the division is kind of open, because you expect the Lions maybe to take a half step back with two new coordinators. So that allows maybe a window of opportunity for everybody else in the division maybe to sneak in there and give them a fight a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised if the last place team in this division this year ended up, you know, having like 8 wins. And, you know, again, you're in another situation where you have all teams maybe over 500 in this division at the end of the year.
Yeah, I agree with you, Steve. This is Steve Sparky Pfeiffer. He's the Afternoon Drive host on 105.7 The Fan in Milwaukee, talking to him about the Packers. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to sneak a Brewers question in there too. But I also think for all the talk, and I do think it is appropriate to discuss when it comes to the Packers receivers, health is going to help them when it comes to their tight end group. Do you think that that might pick up a lot of the slack when it comes to maybe the impressions you get to start the year?
I have been a big proponent last year, and I will continue to be a big proponent until I see something different. That Tucker Kraft, the tight end for the Packers, they should use him like Kelce. They should use him like Kittle. He should be that guy in this offense that gets, you know, 7 to 10 targets a game. His ability to break tackles and run over dudes, he's got really good hands. That should be their guy. And then let the receivers fall in where they fall in behind that. Christian Watson's dad, who's very active on social media, sometimes for the good, sometimes for the very bad, has been a big believer in, this is kind of like Matt LaFleur's fault of why there is no true one wide receiver in Green Bay, because of how the offense is built and how it's spread out. And every week the game plan changes for where the offense is going to flow to. So how can you ever get a true number one wide receiver like a Davante Adams or whoever, who gets, you know, 10 to 12 targets a game? That's just not going to happen based on how this offense plays week in and week out. So is he right? Maybe. Or Matt LaFleur just doesn't believe that anybody is talented enough to shoulder that burden like Davante Adams was week in and week out. I'm guessing that's more of less of what the issue is here, more than he simply just doesn't want to feature somebody. But that's been Christian Watson's dad's take on this whole thing of, you'll never have a featured one wide receiver as long as they continue to call the offense the way they do week to week.
That's been the story for the Packers, finally getting some receiving help, some pass-catching help, if you will, for Jordan Love. Can't wait to see how that turns out. Hopefully it ends up with Jordan Love from a Chicago perspective on his back several times. That's how we see things here. But, Steve, I do want to switch over to baseball.
Let me cut you off real quick. So the Jordan Love on his back thing, it's going to be more difficult to do that, because if this offense plays the way they did in the second half of the season, he just doesn't throw the ball all that much. That offense second half of last season was more about, majority of the season really, was about Josh Jacobs running the football and a little bit of play action. I think they should use more play action. But they really kind of took the ball out of Jordan Love's hands last year. He wasn't throwing the ball 40 times a game by any stretch of the imagination. So if they continue to play that conservative run-first type offense, then you're not going to have as many opportunities to even get to Jordan Love.
That's a good point, a fair point, as it were, and we know how good that backfield can be. We're seeing how good the Brewers can be, and for some reason, people don't necessarily take them seriously until the end of the season when they're where they are, which is usually in the playoffs. How optimistic are you with the way this team looks and the health of the starting staff with the rest of the season going for the Brewers?
I'm pretty confident. I think they are still one bat away, a power bat of some sort. You know, Eugenio Suarez is the guy that everybody wants because there's not many bats out there. It doesn't look like at the trade deadline. So the third baseman from the D-backs. They have Caleb Durbin at third base now. You know, he's a smaller in stature guy, doesn't have a ton of power, plays hard, all of that. But I think they're really one big bat away from putting that in the middle of the lineup to really taking that next step. And I'd like to thank the White Sox for Andrew Vaughn. It's been a pleasant surprise. We've really enjoyed Andrew Vaughn. Not sure what happened when he was with y'all, but
nothing. Nice nothing happened. relatively speaking, for the last couple of years. That's why he got demoted, unfortunately. And I hate saying it that sharply, but that's the case.
For a bad offense. He couldn't hack it on a bad offensive team.
Well, he was in a bad organization. But this is the thing. So the Brewers have been kind of like the Bucks for the last several years. Go the first round, get bopped out, and then we're done, and that's the end of it. The last time they were in the NLCS was 2018. 2018, Yelich was an MVP that year and so forth, but they also had a guy named Jesus Aguilar who had like 35, 36 home runs, had the best year of his career, was never the same player after that. I said yesterday on the show, I said, well, if Andrew Vaughn becomes their Aguilar in the second half and continues to be unconscious like he's been and becomes that surprise, lightning in a bottle, has an unbelievable second half of the year and then goes back to being Andrew Vaughn after that, that could be enough to really get this Brewers team on a run if he continues to play the way that he is with that bat. It would be a huge surprise to everybody. And when they traded for Andrew Vaughn that day, Pat Murphy, the Brewers manager, was talking to the media about the trade with Aaron Civale for Andrew Vaughn. And Pat Murphy said, he goes, we've been watching him. It's pretty simple. If you keep his stroke short and compact, he's really, really good. If that stroke gets long, that's where he has problems. We just have to focus on keeping it as a more shorter, compact approach at the plate, and we think he'll be pretty good. And if you watch, that's pretty much what he's been, is a lot more shorter, compact swing, and it's been working for him so far.
You make it sound so simple.
You hoping that Andrew Vaughn's offense is consistent and somewhat in the neighborhood of Jesus Aguilar. Welcome to White Sox fandom, Steve Sparky Pfeiffer. You now understand where we were, I think, probably the last like 3 years of his career.
Also,
here.
How do you unlock Aaron Civale? Could you give us a hint?
Yeah, sure I can. Hire Chris Hook, the pitching coach for the Brewers, because the man is the best pitching coach in Major League Baseball. It's not even remotely close. They just lined him up with a brand new deal for several years because they didn't want the trader getting him down there in Chicago with the Cubs. So he's all lined up to be here. Chris Hook, that's the magic potion for this Brewers staff. No matter who you give him, no matter what their track record was before they get here, they always end up being a lot better under Chris Hook. And then they leave, and it goes sideways. The only exception to that might be Adrian Houser, who obviously is pitching really well.
Yeah, Adrian Houser has been a revelation. How much have you just paid attention to what he's done since he got here? Is it on your radar at all, just as an observer of the Brewers and then former Brewers?
Well, and I'm a fantasy baseball player, so it's on my radar. I've been watching, and I like Adrian Houser. Like, I'm cool rooting for Adrian Houser. Nobody's got any beef with Adrian Houser here. Everybody liked Houser when he was here, so I hope he continues to do well and so forth. And, you know, again, there was a lot of potential in him, too, coming up through the minor leagues in his career. So it's nice to see it finally paying off, and I would assume y'all are going to trade him, right? You're not going to keep him.
That would be the assumption, but the Whites, you know how it is, because you're talking about a Brewers team who, for example, you know that they are going to be buyers if there's enough sellers. I think the White Sox are one of the few teams you know are going to be sellers at the deadline. That would be the goal if I'm observing from their standpoint.
Can I ask you all a personal question?
Sure.
When it came out that it looks like Reinsdorf is getting out of the White Sox, and you're going to the Ishiba family, or Ishiba, however you say his name, to that family of owners, did y'all like have a personal, like, little private party that this was actually going to happen? Because in Milwaukee, I was like, that's the best thing that's happened to the White Sox in forever.
It was not private. I could tell you that. It was very public.
So you celebrated on the radio?
We talked about it a lot, but, you know, it's still not going to happen. They ensure, in that press release, they said not until 2029.
And as early as 2029, as late as 2034.
Well, we just got to have the world survive until then to see what it looks like. Because if you get to that point, then I think your payroll can start getting back into play like where it should be at that point.
Oh, man.
That is the hope.
Girl can dream. Steve Sparky Pfeiffer, this has been a lot of fun. We appreciate you checking in and discussing all things going north or the border, of the border with us. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
I would like to say thank you for not bringing up Giannis's entire interview. I appreciate it.
We know the Bulls aren't in play. It's not a problem for us to skip over Giannis.
Unfortunately.
We're the other Reinsdorfs. Yeah, it's not happening.
Thanks, Steve.
You betcha. Take care, guys.
That was Steve Sparky Pfeiffer. You can also check him out on the Odyssey app, by the way. He's the afternoon host on 105.7, The Fan in Milwaukee. I would like to alert you, breaking news.
What we got?
Cannonball! Join the score tomorrow at Fort Wins Casino Resort in New Buffalo for a special pool party and appearance with Ozzie Guillen and me. I'm not doing a cannonball into the pool. Don't even think about it.
That's a faux tease. I thought you were doing a cannonball.
I thought I was doing Ron Burgundy. It'll be from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Central, 5:30 to 7 p.m. Eastern. Ozzie will be doing a meet and greet with autographs. Do not push Ozzie in the pool either. Just don't do it. That's tomorrow at Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo. You know Ozzy's going to be telling some tales, though. That's for sure. Coming up next, it is halftime. And there is a game that has a grip on our nation like nothing we've ever seen. And they might be taking it to a place where I feel like it's the perfect arena. But there's a twist that is disappointing me. Is that a fair assessment?
That is a pretty fair assessment. You know the game. The game is Uno, and it's coming to Vegas. It's coming to the casino. We'll explain. It is halftime here on Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score.
To stop what you're doing and listen. Cannonball!
College football summer is no time to slouch because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Rahimi, Marshall Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What time is it?
It's halftime.
It is indeed halftime, and a friendly reminder that we are talking to Brian Urlacher at 12:25. And I mentioned breaking news cannonball. He might also have some breaking cannonball news himself. That is a hint.
Brian Urlacher.
Indeed. I'm waiting for the machine. I'm waiting. Anyway.
Sad machine.
There it is. Let's recap what has happened so far at 10 o'clock and 10:25. We talked about our favorite moments from the All-Star game and probably didn't spend enough time talking about how the ABS worked. It just worked. Like, ball strikes seemed fine. Everybody seemed cool. Great.
Quick review.
Great. Roll it out. Shane Smith had a stressful moment with Eugenio Suarez. We all live to tell the tale. Mike Florio joined us at 11, and Steve Sparky Pfeiffer was on with us talking about Wisconsin things, Packers, Brewers, and the like.
But not Giannis.
In the last segment.
It's halftime.
Where do we begin? First of all, I think when you posted on our group thread, Marshall, just the Instagram picture and the headline, I was like, oh, I got to get to Vegas soon. This is exciting. Uno might be coming to Las Vegas?
Oh, no. Uno's definitely coming to Las Vegas.
But then you're thinking if Uno's coming to Las Vegas, it's going to go to casinos.
It is going to a casino. Keep going. Yeah, you're on the right path.
Playing Uno for money in Las Vegas. This sounds awesome. I'm going to get a new Uno deck. I'm going to refamiliarize myself with some Uno skills. It's going to be a great time.
To be clear, I don't think casino's going to let you bring your own Uno deck to Uno at the casino. I think
that's not the point. You play, you practice with your friends and then you roll up to the casino and you're like, I got this.
I don't need no practice because it's Uno and I've been playing Uno since I was like four.
I did too, but then I took a long break.
Oh, I've never taken that long of a break because Uno, if there's a deck coming out, we're playing Uno. It's a game at any age you can just, is if you can recognize numbers and you can read, you can play Uno.
I also got on a Pigao poker kick for a while. I don't want to talk about it.
All right, so here's the deal. In July, that's this month, Uno is going to take over part of the Palms Casino Resort in Vegas. That's the good news. The bad news is This is all a ploy by Mattel, the toy company that makes the beloved card game. They're opening a nighttime social club in the heart of Las Vegas, which will allow adults to enjoy the game from their childhood in an elevated, modern environment. It's just a social club. It's not an actual table game that you can play in the casino and put money on and bet on Uno.
And as much as people love Uno, you would think that people love Uno's social media, but it basically just tells you what you can't do. Like the Uno Twitter for a long time would just tell you you couldn't do certain things. The same thing happened with the Instagram. They said, hey, Uno fans, a rumor has come to our attention that there will be Uno tables on the casino floors in Las Vegas. Sounds wild, huh? Yeah, it does, Uno. It sounds great. Well, we hate to be the bearers of bad news, but the casino floor isn't ready for us yet. We've been told that while they do have tight security, it's not robust enough for Uno at this time.
Wow. Here's what's great about the Palms.
You're just admitting that Uno starts fights. And you know it. You're laughing because you know.
It's the equivalent of like a simpler version of bringing Monopoly to the casino floor. How would that end? Not well.
Isn't that kind of the point?
Families divided.
As an entertainer by trade, I feel like that is kind of the point.
So here's what is actually going to happen. At Palms Casino Resort, they're going to transform a suite into a vibrant card game inspired local with gaming tables, a private dealer, various Uno games and expansions, as well as other amenities. Here's the more bad news. This is by invite only. You can't just go show up.
If only we knew the owner of a casino who is known to create something where there wasn't a need before, or wasn't a market before. If only we knew someone who might be interested in taking advantage of the appetite for gambling on Uno.
I'll let you think on that.
Derek Stevens, where you at?
The toy maker is just held a contest on TikTok, of all places, for one lucky winner and a guest to stay and play at the Uno Social Club Suite, which is what they're calling it, from July 18th through the 20th. That's in 2 days. Mattel will open future social club pop-ups in locations across the country with special themed drinks, photo ops, and Uno tournaments. It's just branding, people. It's branding disguised as an opportunity to play Uno for money. But if you want to play Uno for some money, I'm your guy.
The amount of headlines.
I'll show up.
Like when you Google Uno Vegas, it's all like, no, you can't gamble on Uno in Vegas. Like all these just real buzzkill headlines, like womp womp.
Could you imagine if they added Uno to the Naperville Topgolf? I mean, that would just be bad.
See, then it wouldn't just be possession. It would be more than possession of weapons. So what was that? Right?
Are we allowed to make that announcement? We are.
I'll go ahead and just say it on there. We're going to be in Vegas. I'll make it this an impromptu, quick halftime story that was off the air yesterday as we were texting about the All-Star break. Layla, what did you see that made you feel like summer was dwindling away on us?
Oh my gosh, it was the college football promo for Texas and Ohio State on Fox. I was like, nah,
and
what are you doing?
And I felt the same thing when I saw that and I saw your text and I was like, same, Layla. But don't worry, because one of the things you said was, what? You haven't even been to the pool yet, right?
I haven't been to the pool.
August 20th through the 24th, we're going to be at Circa Resort and Casino and Stadium Swim at the pool. So August 20th through the 24th, we'll get some pool time out there in Las Vegas.
Yes, we will.
I've never been. I'm excited to go. Also, on the text line, 708, Uno needs spades at the family reunion after a few drinks level of security, which is accurate. 815, my wife likes to spring crazy home rules on me and acts like I'm insane that I don't play that way. Let me tell you something. 219. Think of the children, Grandma. Think of your children, LOL, to get you and all my grandkids and hit you with a skip. Listen, man, Grandma's playing Uno will make little kids feel like they're no longer Grandma's favorite.
815. The problem with Uno is everyone has their own rules. No one plays the rules on the box. Can't double a draw two and make it a draw four?
You can always double down. You can always make somebody draw 12 is my goal.
Just make us gamble on Uno. Come on. I think we all want to do it. We would be at the casino for days.
Why doesn't Las Vegas casinos have tables for risk? 773. That's going to take too long. Although Monopoly would take too long as well. Let's be honest.
I love it all. I need it all. So yeah, Derek Stevens, we're going to see you. I don't think we can have Uno done by then, but just think about it. A girl can dream. Coming up next, it is Five on It. We have important baseball questions to ask. And I think in addition, maybe one for the future that we can reasonably say, Pete Crow Armstrong is headed this way. We discuss it all next. I'm Rahimi and Harris on The Score.
College football summer is no time to slouch because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.